Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, The Rainy Season and Autumn, text number 29. Dadhi odanam samannitam, silayam shalilantike, sambojani yairbhubuje, kupai sam Karshanan Vitaha. Dadhi Odanam. Boiled rice mixed with yogurt. Samanitam. Sent. Shilayam. On a stone. Shalila Antike, near the water. Sambhojaniyai, who would take meals with him? Bubhujay, he ate. Gopai, together with the cowherd boys. Sankashan Anvitaha, in the company of Lord Balaram. Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt sent from home in the company of Lord Sankarshan and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. Picnic. There's no purport. But we have Prabhupada's commentary here, which is text number 26. The Lord enjoyed the company of Lord Baladeva and the other cowherd boys and sometimes sat with them on the same stone slab. While sitting, they ate simple food like rice, dal, vegetables, bread and curd, which they had brought from their homes and which they shared in friendly exchanges. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has expressed his willingness to accept fruit, flowers, leaves and water from his devotees when they have been offered to him in devotional affection. The Lord can eat anything and everything, which he does. At the destruction of the universe, he consumes everything. Because everything is but a transformation of his own energy. But when there is a question of offering him something, the offerings must be within the range of the edibles the Lord has ordered. We cannot offer the Lord that which he has not ordered. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, cannot be offered anything beyond the range of good foodstuffs like rice, dal, wheat, vegetables, milk, and milk preparations, and sugar. At Jagannath Puri, the Lord is offered such foodstuffs, and in all scriptures, the very same foodstuffs are mentioned everywhere. The Lord is never hungry, nor does he require any food to fill his empty stomach. He is complete in himself. Yet, he always mercifully eats the foods offered by his devotees in sincere affection. The cowherd boys brought simple foodstuffs from home, and the Lord, who is constantly served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, is always glad to accept such simple foodstuffs from his devotee friends. All the relatives of the Lord are his devotees only, and they are situated in different transcendental mellows as friends, parents, and lovers. The Lord derives transcendental pleasure by accepting services from his various grades of devotees who are situated in various grades of rasas. These transcendental rasas are pervertedly reflected in the material atmosphere, and thus the spiritual living being, out of ignorance only, vainly seeks the same bliss in matter. Oma gyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam jena tasmaye si guruve namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam jena bhutale svayam rupakadamayam dadati svapitantikam. Mukam protivachalam pangum langhayate gurim yakripa tamaham made si gurum dinacharanam. So, Krishna is, there's a couple of interesting points here. The first one is that Krishna can eat anything. And we've seen that already in the different pastimes in Vrindavan. He was able to swallow the forest fire. Although there's some conjecture as to whether he actually swallowed the fire, because there's the description of Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur, how he condensed the fire into some drops of water and then drank them. But because the Lord is omnipotent, all potent, then he can devour anything he wants. He can consume anything and everything. Because, as Prabhupada points out, everything is simply a transformation of his energy. Everything within the creation is an expansion ultimately of Krishna. And because he's the supreme controller, then everything is under his control. All of his energies are completely under his control. Not like us. When we come into the material world, we try to dominate the material energy, but unfortunately it's never under our control. It appears, but as Krishna points out, ahankaram vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. He's thinking he's the doer. But that's only because Krishna makes it look as if you're doing it. The material energy is actually working under Krishna's direction. Maya yakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam. And it's producing all of the different forms of living entities that are coming out. But it's all under Krishna's direction. And because it's under his direction, therefore he's able to transform it in any way he likes. So in that sense, he can then consume anything. By transforming it whichever way he wants, he can then absorb it, expand it, subtract it. But of course, as is pointed out in the Upanishad, whether he subtracts it or expands it, divides it, multiplies it, it all remains his. He remains complete. He's the complete whole. It all remains under his control. So then Prabhupada makes the point here. When there's a question of offering him something, then we should offer it as he requests. Right? I think this is a principle that applies to all of our service, actually. All service that we perform has to be done in a way that Krishna likes it. Not the way that we like it, but the way he wants it. This is a major consideration in the performance of devotional service. One of the reasons why we have to approach Krishna by following the instructions of his representative. And Prabhupada would make this point, you know, if the spiritual master asks for a drink of water, you don't bring him a drink of orange juice or a drink of milk. Same principle. If Krishna wants devotional service performed in a particular way, then we are obliged to perform it in that particular way. We were discussing this last night in the Sunday feast. Before Rupa Goswami gets into the details of the performance of devotional service, he makes the point that one needs to inquire from an authority. One has to inquire how to perform devotional service from the spiritual master. This is why ours is predominantly a siksha line, because, you know, just by taking initiation doesn't mean then automatically you know everything. We generally take initiation from somebody who has trained us. So more important is the siksha. Not to minimize the diksha, because the diksha is a formalization or a recognition of the importance of taking instructions and following them carefully on the advice of the spiritual master. Actually, one devotee written to me recently was asking, you know, do we have to accept Prabhupada's instructions? Do we have to accept Prabhupada's instructions? Actually, the question was, do we have to accept Prabhupada as infallible? Do we have to accept everything that he says and follow it? Well, according to Rupa Goswami, yes, we do. This is the principle of spiritual life. The reason why the spiritual master is infallible is because when he speaks, he's not speaking something that he's created. He's speaking the words which Krishna has already given us. So because Krishna is infallible and the spiritual master speaks the instructions that Krishna has given, therefore his instruction is also infallible. That's why it's not that automatically we accept a person, oh, he's the guru, therefore everything he does is perfect. Everything he does is perfect because he's following the principle of disciplic succession and he's giving us the instructions of Krishna. When the spiritual master creates something different, then that's when we don't follow him. What's an example of that? Anybody can think of a classic example? Yeah, Shukracharya and Bali Maharaj. When Shukracharya said to Bali Maharaj, don't worship Lord Vishnu. That's basically what he said. Don't worship Lord Vishnu. Bali Maharaj was aware enough, he's an astute enough devotee to realize, this is not right. Guru is supposed to tell me to worship Krishna. If the guru tells me not to worship Krishna, then because the guru is infallible, does that mean we then follow his faulty instructions? No. You know, because we're not just a bunch of blind morons, you know, that just follow. Well, we shouldn't be. And we should also be careful enough to select a guru or a teacher who is faithful to the process. This is one of the qualifications of a guru, is that they're faithful to the tradition. So we can test. And of course, you know, in a situation where we see Srila Prabhupada and his achievements, then really the question shouldn't come up, oh, should we follow Srila Prabhupada? It's fairly obvious that Prabhupada's instructions and his example are sufficient for us not to have to doubt that we should follow him, actually. Well, that's a sign of serious problems. Unfortunately, it is. It's a sign of, if we have doubt. And of course, doubts are not unusual. Doubts are normal. But if we're associating with the devotees, and if we're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and rendering service, then these things quite easily can be, you know, they're like clouds. Ignorance or illusion. Doubts are like clouds. And as Prabhupada points out, Krishna Surya Sam, Krishna is like the sun. And Krishna is non-different from his devotional service. So when we engage in the process of devotional service, then the Krishna sun rises up and dissipates all of this ignorance and confusion about Prabhupada and, you know, our process. So this is a very important point. When Krishna says patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakja prayachati, then we should take heed of that instruction. Of course we do. You know, the devotees don't offer Krishna. It reminds me once, on Janmashtami, one of the devotees brought Krishna a pack of cigars. Pack of cigars, you know, new tie, set of cufflinks. You know, you might get an ordinary man these kind of gifts for his birthday, right?
The sign cigars.
Yeah. But this is not what Krishna wants. Krishna doesn't want prasadam. Krishna doesn't want a bogus cigar. Bogus cigar. We find out what Krishna wants and we serve him in that way. And of course Prabhupada says here, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna cannot be offered anything beyond the range of good foodstuffs. Right? Good foodstuffs. Foodstuffs in the mode of goodness, basically. Sattva. Like rice, dal, wheat, vegetables, milk, and milk preparations, and sugar. And of course, the residents of Vrindavan know what Krishna likes. Mother Yashoda knows what Krishna's like. So Krishna's out in the fields, and Mother Yashoda's busy in the kitchen making things and then giving them to the cowherd boys. Okay, take this out to Krishna. Right. Totally focused and absorbed in Krishna. Even when Krishna isn't present, then the residents of Vrindavan are fully absorbed in meditating on Krishna. And actually, when you think about it, not much different to the kind of things that we're doing. This is the beauty of devotional service. Krishna gives us an opportunity to think of him, to render service to him, to meditate on him, just like the residents of Vrindavan. Right? We're cooking in the kitchen, cutting up fruits and vegetables, preparing a lunch and so forth, and thinking about Krishna. It's quite amazing what the acharyas have given us, what Prabhupada has given us. We can perform the same activities as the residents of Vrindavan, who are fully absorbed in Krishna. And by doing the same activities, we also become absorbed in Krishna. Huh? Which is one of the reasons why, as I've been mentioning of late, it's recommended that we follow this, the deity worship process especially, quite strictly. Because by committing offences, then it actually blocks us. It creates blockages by which we can meditate nicely on Krishna. But if we do the service the way Krishna likes it, it actually clears away the blockages. Clears away the anattas and the offensive mentality. That's what it's for. So that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, instead of bashing ourselves up against all material desires and material attachments, those things are actually washed away and we can clearly perceive Krishna in his name. Clearly perceive Krishna when we come before the deity and we see Radha Ballabha, we see, oh, Radha and Krishna, please protect me. Please engage me. I am fallen. I have no hope in engaging in devotional service, but somehow or other let me come closer to my spirit. This is, you know, the mood of a devotee. Please let me come closer to my guru so that I can receive instructions from him so I can know how to serve you. I'm not qualified to serve you. But somehow or other, by good fortune, I've come into the association of the devotees and in the association of a bona fide spiritual master who is now training me how to serve you. Please engage me. So when the blockages are removed, then one feels a tangible relationship with Krishna. If it's not a tangible relationship with Krishna, at least approaching Krishna through a tangible relationship with the spiritual master. Right? With Prabhupada or with Prabhupada's servants. We have a tangible relationship based on offering Krishna what Krishna wants, not speculating on what we think Krishna likes, or what we like, or what we think we like. You know, this is a, being a speculator is like a, being called a speculator is quite insulting for a devotee. Because a devotee is not a speculator. In the sense that we create things, you know, we create something new. But rather, our system is Mahajana Jaina Katasa Panta, we follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. And the previous acharyas are following in the footsteps of their previous acharyas. That's the system. So this is the means by which we offer ourselves to Krishna, actually. By following, even initially it may be imitation. Prabhupada says that's not a problem. Imitation's okay. Imitation of a good thing is fine. Because by simply following the mood, the attitude of devotional service will come out automatically. Oop, I need these on. Oop. Okay. Now the next thing is that even though Krishna recommends that we offer him things, actually he's never hungry.
He's always hungry.
Prabhupada said here, the Lord is never hungry. Sorry to differ.
Isn't that food? Isn't Krishna always hungry for
devotional love? Well, no, he doesn't say that here either. The Lord is never hungry, nor does he require any food to fill his empty stomach. In other words, there's a bit of a difference between us and Krishna. He is complete. Why is he not hungry? Because he's complete. Was it Sadaishvarya Purnam? He is full. And Atmarama, fully satisfied. He doesn't need to eat. It's just material bodies that need to eat. Material bodies have empty stomachs. But a spiritual body doesn't have an empty stomach. It's fully spiritual. It is complete. In other words, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate. If he was hungry, it would mean that he's not complete. But, however, he always mercifully eats the foods offered by his devotees in sincere affection. So in order to reciprocate and to enhance the exchanges of affection between he and the devotees, he accepts the offerings of the devotees. What is it? Priti lakshanam, the qualities of affection, love and affection, dadati pratigrinati guyamakyati pichati bhunkte bhojayate jaiva bhunkte bhojayate. So offering food and taking food are lakshana, symptoms of priti, love and affection. So the cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda, the other residents of Vrindavan want to show their affection for Krishna, so they're cooking for him, running the it's not prasadam, it's bhoga, out to Krishna so that he can enjoy it. And Krishna accepts it. The cowherd boys brought simple foodstuffs from home. And the Lord, who is constantly served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So, you know, this is the example, right? Or comparison. Or comparison?
Metaphor.
Metaphor. No, not a metaphor, but...
Contrast.
Thank you. Contrast. Krishna is being served by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis, the gopis. They're all cooking for him. Radharani's cooking for him. But, and so, you know, what does he need? Some simple foodstuffs from the cowherd boys. I say, it's interesting. When Sudama Vipra came to see Krishna, all he brought was some broken, chipped rice. Right? But Krishna valued that offering so much. Even though, you know, in the palace kitchens they're cooking him a huge big feast. Right? Still, he valued the offering of his devotee. Because Prabhupada points out here, he always mercifully eats the food offered by his devotees in sincere affection. So as Krishna is accepting the sincere affection rather than a fancy offering, if you like. That doesn't mean that we should cook substandard offerings and, you know, make out like we've got lots of devotion. Because generally speaking, we measure our devotion by the effort we put into preparing things nicely for Krishna. Very important. You know, like a wealthy man, Prabhupada says, a wealthy man shouldn't just give a few paisa. Oh, Krishna, please accept my offering. I'm offering it with love and devotion. In the meantime, he's keeping crores in the bank. Right? So Krishna can see when it's not sincere affection. Sincere affection means offering in a way that Krishna likes. So, you know, when we have a standard, so many savouries, so many sweets for the 7 o'clock offering, we shouldn't skimp. You know, what do the devotees do to skimp? They make salad. Okay. Salad. Chips. That's so common. Said, okay, chips and salad, that's only one prep. Because, you know, how much effort do you have to put into making chips and salad? So it's a test, actually. It's a test. All the relatives of the Lord are his devotees only, and they are situated in different transcendental mellows as friends, parents, and lovers. So each one of them offers in a slightly, their affection, their love and affection in a slightly different way, because their mood of service is fixed in a particular rasa or relationship. There are the five primary rasas, and then in the absence of the five primary rasas, there are the 7 secondary rasas. Right? There's the shanta rasa, which is static relationship, not a dynamic relationship. But there is a relationship. I heard it yesterday actually, Prabhupada was explaining these rasas. And he was saying, just like you're sitting on a soft chair. So the relationship is you're feeling the comfort of the soft cushion. Right? But the chair is there in a shanta relationship, neutral relationship. So just like I'm sitting on this, we're sitting, everybody who gives the class sits on this asana. The asana is rendering service in a neutral relationship. Like it's not doing anything actually, but we're sitting on it. But still it's able to render service. So there is a relationship. Right? And then the next one, which is considered to be where we start our devotional service, because, you know, shanta, you know, doing nothing for Krishna, you can't test whether a person is actually exhibiting or showing any devotion when they're not doing anything for Krishna. They can say, oh yes, I'm meditating on Krishna, I'm deeply absorbed in Krishna. But how do we know? So therefore, our devotional service begins when we start rendering service. Actually, the neutral relationship in one sense is just sitting and hearing also. But if we're sitting and hearing, and we're hearing instructions like perform devotional service, right? Then after hearing, we'll get up and then perform devotional service. Right? It can be tested. And it's tested by the rendering of devotional service. So, dasyam. Krishna's chariot driver is his servant. Daruka. Is it Daruka? Fanning Krishna is described in the Nectar of Devotion. He's fanning Krishna. I think there's a nice example there. He's fanning Krishna and he's feeling great ecstasy in fanning Krishna. Huh? But then he's getting too much in ecstasy that he can't hold the fan. He's about to fall over with ecstasy. So he prays, Krishna, please take away this ecstasy so I can just render my service. Huh? So even a devotee is not interested in getting ecstasy necessarily. Certainly if it interferes with his service, he prays, no, take away this ecstasy so I don't drop the fan on you. See that sometimes the pujari drops the fan out of ecstasy in the deity room. Actually, sometimes I think it's because they fell asleep. Oops. So, dasya. And then sakya, which is what we're seeing here, the cowherd boys. Very, very friendly. You know, Daruka wouldn't think about playing tricks on his master. Wouldn't be quite right. You know, when Krishna gets to step on the chariot, then he moves it forward so Krishna falls over. But not quite the same right mood. But with the cowherd boys, they're friendly with Krishna, so they don't mind playing tricks. And actually, Krishna likes it. Krishna likes the cowherd boys playing tricks on him. Close your eyes. I've got a lovely rasgulla for you. Huh? And then they stick a dandelion in his mouth. So he chews on the flower. Oh, that's not a rasgulla. What are you doing? So then they have a fight. Now, this is the nature of boys playing. It's interesting. The secondary rasas come in when the primary rasa has been removed. So they're rendering service to Krishna, playing with Krishna, then they give him a flower instead of a sweet. And then the service of friendship is enhanced by the fact that now Krishna gets angry and he wants to fight with them. So then the chivalrous rasa comes in. Okay, I'll take you on. Right? You see that? We've seen that before. Krishna and Balaram, two different teams. Okay, we'll beat you today. If you beat us, then we'll carry you on our shoulders. So, in this way, the different rasas give way. There are exchanges. Then, when more intimate than the sakya, because sakya is intimate, close, but more intimate and close to Krishna is the vatsalya, or parental relationship. Where the devotee feels that Krishna is dependent upon me. And if he doesn't do what I tell him, if he doesn't behave properly, then I'll have to chastise him. That's a very intimate relationship. The parents' relationship with the children is very intimate because the parents are always serving the child. But then sometimes having to chastise them out of affection. And then Madhurya Rasa. For each of the devotees, these relationships bring out affection. Krishna has affection for the devotees and the devotees have affection for Krishna. So it brings out this rasa, rasamrita, this eternal mood of affection. And as Prabhupada points out in the Nectar of Devotion, the reason why we serve people is because we get some taste out of doing that service. We get some pleasure out of it. The wife serves the husband serves the wife, the husband serves the boss. We all get pleasure out of the different relationships that we have and in rendering service. There is nobody who is not a servant. Although, you know, you will find people who will object. Jagannathan was telling me the other day that in his one of his Bhakti Vriksha groups, there was one lady who was coming. Actually, they don't invite her anymore because she likes to centre everything around her. So they stopped inviting her. But she found out one day that they were having a program and she likes to go to parties. And then he was saying, everybody's a servant. She said, I'm not a servant of anybody. And apparently she bosses her husband around like anything. Do this, do that, sit here. So there are some people who claim, I'm not serving anyone. But actually, we're all servants. So the most intimate servant is the Madhurya, the gopis. So, as Prabhupada points out here, the devotees rendering service gives pleasure to Krishna. And so therefore Krishna accepts. Even though he's not hungry, he accepts the foodstuffs that have been offered by the devotees. Of course he can eat. Just like there's the example of Lord Chaitanya. The devotees from Bengal used to make up parcels of foodstuffs for Lord Chaitanya. And, you know, the most delicate sweetmeats and savouries, they would wrap them and prepare them in such a way so that they would stay very fresh so that Lord Chaitanya could enjoy them. And I've forgotten, who was it that used to bring them? I've forgotten what his name is. He used to bring them and then give them to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya used to give them to Govinda and Govinda would just keep them. Just keep them aside. But then eventually there was a whole room full of all of these preparations that had been prepared for Lord Chaitanya, and the devotees were asking, you know, how did you enjoy my this? How did you enjoy that? And Lord Chaitanya hadn't eaten them yet. So then he said to Govinda, okay, bring out the bring out everything. And then in one sitting, Lord Chaitanya ate the whole lot. Right, so he doesn't, you know, it's not like, oh, that's too big, I can't eat that. For Krishna, it's no problem. Okay, bring it on. Huh? Not a problem for Krishna to eat a big mountain of rice and dal and sabji, as Prabhupada points out. In Jagannath Puri, Krishna's eating 64 times a day. Huh? We can't even eat more than 2 or 3 times a day, even though we might like to. We get indigestion eventually. And Krishna doesn't have a problem with indigestion. He doesn't have a stomach, so he doesn't have to worry about indigestion. Although Lord Chaitanya on one occasion feigned indigestion. Right? And then Murari Gupta prescribed water for him. Drink some water, that'll get rid of your indigestion. So, the Lord derives transcendental pleasure by accepting services from his various grades of devotees who are situated in various grades of rasas. And each one of us has a relationship with Krishna in one of those rasas. We just haven't discovered it yet. This is one of the reasons why we are recommended to render our service, especially the archana vidhi, carefully, because that removes the obstacles in progressing towards understanding what our relationship actually is with Krishna. It's so important. You know, we see some devotees have difficulty in their devotional service. And I mentioned this the other day, but it's worth repeating. The reason why is, as far as I can figure, is they don't regularly come and see the deities. They don't regularly come and render service. But if we do it regularly, it's a great blessing, actually. It is not a burden, but it is actually a great blessing that we can come daily before the deities and offer ourselves to Krishna. It's a great blessing. And what happens, I've noticed, when I don't come before the deities regularly and offer myself, then, you know, the mountains of material attachments and so forth build back up again. The ignorance covers me over again. And then I start thinking, oh, is this process any good? Does it really work? Well, it doesn't work if you don't apply it. But if you do apply it carefully and attentively, then have a guess what? It works. It's very powerful. Extremely powerful. So that when we chant Hare Krishna, we can actually feel Krishna's presence. We can feel Krishna purifying us. And we can, you know, at least we can come to the point of dasya. Right? At least we can get to the point of rendering service. Otherwise, what happens is, I've noticed this over the years, if we're not regularly habituated to coming and presenting ourselves to this process, then we lose our taste for the whole thing. We lose our taste for chanting. We lose our attachment for association with the devotees. And we lose our attachment for rendering service. So that then the services that we do have become like huge burdens. Oh no, it's so hard, I can't do it. My mind hurts. And then, as Prabhupada points out, then we start looking for, because we are pleasure seekers and we have to have relationships, then we start looking for the same pleasure, but have a guess what? In the wrong place. Because we can't not seek out pleasure in relationships, then we look for it in relationships in the material realm. Right? That's what happens. Then we, you know, we look at with friends or work associates or pets. Right? That's what people, you know, Prabhupada says, everybody wants to serve. So he gives the example, you know, mum and dad have had their kids and the kids all grow up and leave, and then what do? They buy a dog. Get a dog or a cat or a budgerigar, right? Or they become a servant of the television. Right? But of course, those relationships are pale and really unsatisfying for the devotee. But we get, you know, we tend to get a bit covered over and then it becomes very difficult. We get confused and hard to see. You know, what should I do? How should I, which direction shall I take? Things become confused. We have to be chanting and rendering service in such a way so that our minds, instead of, you know, Prabhupada gives the example, a mind is like a pond. If you get a stick and you put it in the pond and you stir up the bottom of the pond, then all the muck and gunk that's at the bottom of the pond gets stirred up in all the water and then you can't see clearly. Right? So that's likened to material activities. Material activities just create confusion. But for a devotee who follows the process of devotional service, it means cultivating the mode of goodness, and as a result of cultivating the mode of goodness, become peaceful so that all of the muck and rubbish that's floating around, it's not agitated and it all settles to the bottom of the pond. And so then the water becomes clear so that one can see things as they are. But that clearing or pacifying characteristic or quality only comes about if one puts in the effort. There has to be a significant amount of effort, a significant amount of cultivation, basically, of the mode of goodness, and then, of course, sudasattva, pure goodness, so that one can see things clearly. Of course, and Prabhupada recommends, actually, you know, that one of the methods for doing that is regularly chanting very, very carefully, 16 rounds a day, at least for us, minimum. Chanting 16 rounds a day. So that you know, despite the confusion and the the murkiness of everything, Prabhupada says, sit down and just chant. I know that's very effective. We feel disturbed. Basically, we're disturbed by material desires. What's the way to get rid of it? Sit down and just chant. Even if you've chanted your 16 rounds, right? We've chanted 16 rounds, but still we're disturbed. So what do? Chant some more. It'll go away. Material world is a temporary place. Spiritual life is eternal. And it's purified. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Hoya Andaka Yahan Krishna. Was it? Tahan Mai. No, Maya Adika Tahan something. Krishna is like the sun. Maya is like the darkness. Where there's Krishna, then the darkness can't be present. Or Maya can't be present. Where there's the sun, then there shouldn't be any shadows. So, we are also relatives of Krishna, if you like. Devotees of Krishna. Only we've forgotten it. We're very fortunate in having been given the association of the devotees and the process by which we can please Krishna. But we have to follow the process. Otherwise, basically what we're doing is we're creating our own process. And that's not pleasing to Krishna. Won't be effective. So therefore, we follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, knowing, and Prabhupada makes, it's in the Bhagavatam actually, the acharyas have gone back home, back to Godhead, but they have kindly left us the process, the system, the means by which we can also follow them. They don't take it with them, they leave it behind in the form of their instructions. What's it say at the beginning of the Bhagavatam? I wonder if it's in the beginning. I know it's in the beginning of the first canto, but I don't know whether it's in the beginning of the... It's not. The beginning words? The first words, pretty much, the dedication in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Does anybody know? He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. He lives forever. I think that's how it goes. Is that right? Yeah, he lives forever. Very nice. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Mahatma.
I mean, maybe the same point. As we see the Bhagavad Gita, in Prabhupada gives big purport on the 9th chapter, I think 27th verse.
Yes.
His senses are absolute. So he is hungry always, he is not hungry. But Prabhupada is always right. Correct.
Yes.
Because his senses are interchangeable. So he doesn't have to eat like you with his mouth. He can eat from any sense.
Yeah, he eats with his eyes. Or he eats with his ears. Yes.
That's why in so many pictures in India you see Lord Krishna eating a tuba. He's called a tuba. Pure devotee with your full devotion.
Yes, he doesn't need to. He doesn't actually eat with his stomach.
He's never hungry anymore.
Anything else? Okay. Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.